Nacho Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the second episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. This episode is brought to you by our great friends over at Euro Fantasy Game, where you can play fantasy football as well as read a lot of great articles on Serie A from writers such as John Solano, Enrico Passarella, frequent guests on our podcast, as well as today's guest, Chloe Beresford, who we'll chat with about Fiorentina at the end of the podcast. And yours truly, yesterday I wrote a column with six breakout players in Serie A. So check that out. So today, it's our Thursday episode, so we'll do our game picks for the weekend in Serie A. We'll answer your Twitter questions. As I mentioned, we're going to close the podcast with Chloe Beresford to catch up with Fiorentina. But before we get to all that, I am joined by our great friend, the co-host, the producer of the podcast, the maker of viral videos on Twitter, Alex Goldberg, who is doing a fantastic job. So, Alex, I got some feedback that people, A, want to hear more from you, and that it feels that sometimes we're a little bit too scripted, which, you know, I think it can be pretty fair. I'll just let you guys know, I hate podcasts where people just ramble and there's no set plan, so maybe I take it a little bit too far. So maybe you guys can give us some feedback on that. So with that out of the way, Alex, I'm going to make it very open-ended. We have a big match on Saturday. We have Milan playing at the San Paolo against Napoli. So there's a lot of storylines. Normally, I would kind of lead you down a path, but today I'm going to let you go solo. When you think of this match, what's the first thing that jumps at you?
All right, David, the first thing that jumps out at me is it's cohesion in Napoli versus loose parts in Milan. And what I mean by that is, sure, Napoli lost Jorginho and Sarri, but overall, they are still pretty much the same team they have been for a few years now. Now, Milan, it's a lot of nice parts, but they are loose parts. They are parts that have not played together for very long at all. Even the players that have been there last year have still not played with each other for very long. And then there's obviously newcomers and Higuain and Bakayoko and Caldara, and I could go on and on. So for me, this match is a lot more even 4 months from now than it is now. There are so many disadvantages in my mind for Milan going into Saturday. First off, they didn't get to play, obviously, because of the awful tragedy in Genoa, so they missed their first game. So they have one less game under their belt than Napoli does. Milan's also the away side, but then, of course, Milan just overall still has less cohesion than Napoli. The other storyline I look at with this is Napoli is a team that many people have predicted to maybe take a step back, and Milan is a team that maybe many people have said will take a step forward. Not that people are picking Milan ahead of Napoli, but they both are teams with almost opposite trajectories, at least being predicted by pundits, you and I, all around the world. So I think this really matters to Napoli. I really do. I'm not going to do a game pick in terms of score like you and Thousand Names do, but I think Napoli is a heavy, heavy favorite in this match for a few reasons, but the main reason is what I've been talking about is that they're cohesive. They're a unit that gels together, but also, David, they're definitely hearing everyone say, Napoli's going to take a step back. They lost Jorginho, who was a huge piece, and they lost Sarri, who was the mastermind behind it all. They're going to take a big step back. Wait a minute. I'm starting to think that the Napoli players are really going to start trying to prove a point, and Carlo Ancelotti saying, wait a minute, what are we, schlubs? And they're certainly not. So I really think Napoli is going to have a chip on their shoulder for a large portion of the beginning of the season. And yeah, I was definitely someone who was not saying as many as others were saying that Napoli would take a step back. But I was thinking they would be worse, definitely worse. I'm starting to think that, yeah, maybe Napoli will fade towards the end of the season when maybe that chip becomes a little lighter on their shoulder. But right now, I think they're out with a point to prove. And I expect a really damn good performance from Napoli on Saturday, and honestly, for a little while, because I think they may feel like they're being short-sighted. I really do. So that's my opinion, David. What about you?
Well, first of all, note to self, I got to leave it more open-ended. You went in a completely different angle than the ways I was going to go, and it turned out to be much better. So very interesting take. I'm going to make my game pick in a little bit, so I won't get into that. So to me, there are some very interesting storylines here. I read somewhere on Twitter, and if it's wrong, I apologize, that Ancelotti has actually never coached against Milan in an official match. It's only been some friendlies. This is the first official match. When in and of itself, if you think about it, that to me says also a little bit that Milan just hasn't been at the top. That we know they haven't been in the Champions League for a while. Ancelotti was on big clubs abroad. That would have been the ideal setting to face him. So now they're going to play against their former coach and someone who played at Milan quite a while. So that's going to be pretty interesting in and of itself. But to me, an even juicier storyline is Gonzalo Higuain returning to the San Paolo. Now, granted, he's done this while he was at Juve. But to me, this is almost more interesting that he's coming back with Milan in some ways. So it won't be as dramatic the first time returning from Napoli's bitter rival, a club who paid his 90 million exit clause and Napoli couldn't do anything about it. Now he's returning after this other move. And, you know, I follow a lot of accounts in Italy, some sites that cover Napoli, and it was really interesting to see how they were covering the Higuain transfer rumors over the summer. They were painting it as if, you know, Higuain had become a big problem at Juve, that he flopped so badly. They weren't able to find a team willing to pay, you know, a good price to acquire him. Milan, you know, ends up getting him on this loan with option to buy. So I'm very interested to see Higuain. I think in general, players don't need extra motivation at that level. But you have to think that after all the storylines on him and Napoli and people there seeing him as kind of a complete afterthought at Juve, how he's going to react. I mean, at the end of the day, Higuain's leaving Juve, left Juve because Ronaldo came in, you know, not exactly some slouch. So that should be rather interesting as well. You mentioned that, Alex, very good point. Napoli has one game under their belt. They probably have some confidence after that win against Lazio. Milan had more time to prepare. If you want to spin it on the positive side, they had more time to integrate their new players into the lineup. But it does sound like Caldara won't be starting. Milan's going to go with Musacchio, who, you know, has more experience on the team, more experience in a four-man defense, and more experience playing next to Romagnoli. So I know some people are going to spin it as, you know, this saying a lot about Caldara. I really don't see it that way. It's just a big adjustment for him, but it's going to be rather interesting to see what happens, because especially Caldara last year had some one of his best matches with Atalanta playing against Napoli. Atalanta and their manager Gasperini have always had Napoli and Sarri's number. So now, you know, Caldara's on a new team. So let's see how that goes. So that should really be a fascinating match. Just a lot of juicy storylines.
Yeah, for anybody who wants to see Caldara right away, it's important to remember the starting 11 at this point in the season is never the same starting 11 at the end of the season. All right, so David, let's move to our game picks. This is our second round of game picks for this new season. And in the first week, you and Thousand Names tied. You both went 1-2 with your three game picks. So let's see if someone can take the lead. So without further ado, what are our game picks from you and Thousand Names for episode 147 of the Calcioland podcast?
You know, on our previews of Serie A, I did say that I don't, for some reason, going into the season, I don't feel like I have as good a feel for the league quite yet. So I promise to do better with my picks starting today. So as usual, I let Thousand Names pick the three matches to make the game picks on. He sends them to me. We have a lot of listeners in Italy. Thousand Names has a cult following there. So to pay tribute to them, I'm going to read them in both Italian and English and also make my picks. So for those of you that are veterans from last year, I think you kind of can pick up some themes in Thousand Names picks that kind of linger throughout the season. And I think you'll see what I mean right away with the first one. So he picked Juve Lazio. The other game on Saturday, this one's going to be, for those of you in the U.S., this is going to be on ESPN2 with our good friend Matteo Bonetti on the call. So Saturday match, Thousand Names has Juve Lazio 1-1. goals by Alessandro and Immobile. The comment, I'll read it in English first. He says, Ronaldo's going to miss a penalty. He's going to say it's another huge flop from the Portuguese. And at the Bernabeu, they are laughing, thinking of the idea of what Florentino Perez did to Juve by sending him over such a flop for a high price. And he also comments that Allegri's at his fifth year at Juve, but Juve still has no style of play. So in Italian, pronostico Juve-Lazio 1-1, Alessandro Immobile, Ronaldo sbaglia rigore, ennesimo flop del portoghese, al Bernabeu ridono con Florentino pensando al pacco che hanno rifilato a Marotta, Allegri al quinto anno non ha ancora dato un gioco. So I actually have Juve winning 2-0. So it's kind of bold if you think about it, because Lazio already lost their first match of the season. They did well. They actually won at Juve Stadium last year, which is really rare. But I actually have more confidence in Juve in this match. I'm going to have it 2-0. I'm going to have Ronaldo scoring his first goal for Juve and Dybala scoring as well. So the 1,000 names, we disagree here. So the next match is the one we talked about in the preview. Napoli-Milan, the other game on Saturday. 1,000 names has Napoli winning 2-1. Goals by Higuain, Milik, and Callejon. The comment is Ancelotti is going to find himself at the top of the standings in Serie A thanks to Sarri's work. That Gattuso is already in a big crisis, and Milan's going to be last in the standings after this match. It's funny because Milan didn't play their first match, but you guys know how 1,000 name rolls. So in Italian, Napoli-Milan 2-1, Higuain, Milik, Callejon. Ancelotti in testa alla classifica sfruttando il lavoro di Sarri, Gattuso allo sbando, Milan ultimo in classifica. I'm going to agree with 1,000. I have Napoli winning 3-1. I think, you know, in a way, I think they're going to build on the confidence from Lazio, although I mentioned at the top, Milan has a little bit more time to get their new players into the squad. I could see them struggling a bit here. So I have Napoli winning 3-1. I'm going to give a brace to Milik and another goal to Insigne, and I'm going to agree that Higuain's going to score here. So 1,000 names, and I agree here. The last match that 1,000 picks is Inter-Torino. Interesting match because both teams lost their opening game of the season. We, of course, have Walter Mazzarri returning with Torino to face his former team, Inter. So he has Inter winning 4-0, braced by Icardi, braced from Perisic. The comment is Handanovic is going to stop one of Belotti's penalty kicks. He's going to say that Mazzarri is going to have to surrender to the Spalletti's tactical genius, says that Torino has no ideas and that Icardi is going to right away take the lead in the capocannoniere race. So in Italian, Inter-Torino 4-0, Icardi doppietta, Perisic doppietta, Handanovic para rigore a Belotti, anche Mazzarri si arrende al capolavoro tattico di Spalletti, Torino senza idee, Maurito subito capocannoniere. I'm going to have Inter winning as well, but not by that margin. I'm going to have it 2-1. I'm going to give a goal to Iago Falque, who was pretty upset last week after the match. I think there's still a chance he might be sold, but I have a feeling if he's sold, the window's still open in some countries. At least he'll get a goal on his way out. And I'll give Icardi and my boy Kita Balde a goal each. So to recap, 1,000 names and I disagree on Juve Lazio. He has it as a draw. I have Juve winning. And we both agree that Napoli is going to beat Milan and that Inter is going to beat Torino. So let's see how we do this year. We're going to keep track of these. Another match that I wanted to tell you about over the weekend, and it's actually not over the weekend, it's the Monday night game. And a lot of times in Serie A, the Monday night games aren't that juicy, but this one is. We have Roma facing Atalanta. Makes sense that it would be on Monday night for Atalanta's side because as we're recording, they're getting ready to play in the Europa League. So those are the other matches to watch. So now let's get to our Twitter questions. As always, we love getting questions from our listeners. We have a lot of new listeners and a lot of them thanks to you, Alex. We have a lot of people tuning in thanks to your videos. We have more Serie A fans also getting into the podcast, so welcome to them. As always, you can send us questions for upcoming podcasts using the CalcioLand hashtag. And which ones are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, David, this is an interesting one. Should Inter fans be concerned with a lack of creativity in the squad?
So I think there's a little bit of knee-jerk reaction to what we saw in the Sassuolo match, or more rather what we didn't see. It wasn't a good performance by Inter. They looked really flat until Kita Balde came on, and it also is due to the fact that, of course, Luka Modric didn't end up coming. They also weren't able to redeem the rights to Rafinha. So I can see why that we've got a lot of questions on the lack of creativity at Inter. I was also asked about this when I did the podcast with our friends at Sempre Inter. This seems to be a theme at Inter, but I don't see it that way as a big crisis quite yet. I think a lot of people, when they think creativity, they think of like the typical number 10, the trequartista role that we see in Serie A. But I think creativity can come from different areas. It's important to note against Sassuolo, Perisic and Kita Balde didn't start. Perisic came in at the beginning of the second half. Kita Balde later on. They're going to start playing a lot more. I think you can get a lot of creativity from the wing. You also can get creativity from your wingbacks. Versalco was very good at crossing when he was at Sassuolo. I think he'll bring that dimension to Inter. And also, while Nainggolan's not, I would say, the most creative, you know, with his force, he can kind of open up space and get things done. So I'm not too concerned quite yet with the creativity at Inter. I need to see once the newer players and those coming back from the World Cup get to play more.
Yeah, I can't stress it enough. Cohesion, cohesion, cohesion brings chemistry. It's not going to all fit together in the first game of the season. All right, David, next Twitter question. Can teams of moderate means break into the top six in Italy? And will the gap continue to grow and become a bit like what we see in the Premier League?
It's a great question. I actually put a lot of thought into this one. And look, we're guilty of this on the podcast. We're always ranking the top six teams. We're always kind of focusing a lot on them. And this is why I wanted to bring in Chloe to talk about Fiorentina. And on Monday, we're going to talk about Atalanta. And those, I would say, are probably the most logical teams that could potentially break into the top six. Torino also spent a lot in the summer. But, you know, when I think about it, you know, when Italy had seven teams legitimately competing for the title or for at least the Champions League spot, we had the same six ones that we have now, which is, of course, Juve, Inter, Milan, Roma, Lazio, teams like that. But the other one was Parma, and they kind of came out of the blue. They were a club that before the 90s weren't a really high-profile club, but they got some rich owners that were trying really to raise the bar. So I think Fiorentina and Atalanta, because of their business models and their current ownership, I'm not sure they can really get to that Parma level and be the seventh team and dethrone one of the top six. It would probably take a rich owner investing in one of the non-top six teams and trying to bring them over the bar. I think, you know, a lot of people would say Atalanta, but I really do think their business model is more like, you know, develop players, sell them for a big profit, and then start the cycle all over again. Maybe I'm underselling them. Maybe they are ready to be poised to take the next level. But we'll delve into them a little bit more on Monday. But for now, I'm going to say it's going to have to take a rich owner who buys another club and has a very ambitious project.
Considering that question is always paralleled to the top six in the Premier League, it makes what Leicester City did in the Premier League that much more amazing. That was truly once-in-a-lifetime stuff. All right, David, next Twitter question. What do you make of the recent drama between Lotito and Simone Inzaghi?
A good pronunciation, Alex. So it's not a big deal to me. So for those of you that haven't followed this too much, there was a recording of Lotito supposedly talking to Simone Inzaghi. And I think it's pretty fair to say that he was talking to Simone Inzaghi, and they were arguing about the medical staff at Lazio. So basically, Simone, they got rid of a two or three members of their medical staff that weren't replaced in a timely manner. And Simone Inzaghi was upset by this. He wanted, you know, to have a medical staff to tell him, are the players actually really hurt or are they just saying that they are? And, you know, there's this recording of Lotito telling him, I'm the boss, you do what I say, I'm in charge. And him also saying, you're always complaining, you have a great squad, stop complaining. So I don't think it's a really big deal on this, but I probably like Lotito more than most people. I think there's a lot of people who don't like him who jumped on this. So I don't know. I don't think it's a big deal because Simone Inzaghi really is a big part of the Lazio family, has a history at the club. And I'm going to actually agree with Lotito in the sense that he has given him a very good squad. And I'm also going to agree with Lotito that Simone Inzaghi does complain quite a bit in his post-match comments. I think he's a superb manager overall, but that's one area we can do a little bit better. But aside from, you know, my judgment of them, how they are, I don't see it as a big deal. I think this is going to be swept under the rug rather quickly.
All right. Next Twitter question, David. Considering all the wingers and forwards at Allegri's disposal, is it possible that one of them is converted into a midfielder?
It's a great question, especially when you consider that Juve's midfield is pretty thin after Sturaro is going to eventually go to Sporting Lisbon once he's healthy, and Marchisio, of course, being released of his contract. So they are pretty thin. I think they only have six midfielders. Like, look, right now it looks like the base formation is going to be that 4-2-3-1, but they are pretty thin. And the one player that has been mentioned as potentially being tried in the midfield is Bernardeschi. And I actually think that would be quite intriguing. You know, he's more known as a very offensive player. I'd be curious to see if he can kind of evolve in a Marchisio-type midfielder. So he seems to be, so far, the one that's going to get the first crack. But you also never know with Mandzukic, too. I mean, Allegri reinvented him as a winger, but that was really kind of a, I don't know. I feel like Mandzukic is just kind of his own thing. He transcends roles. He's really kind of all over the pitch. So maybe he could be used there as well. But for now, it's going to be Bernardeschi first.
All right, David, staying on Juve, should Juve fans be concerned that they only beat Chievo on a stoppage time goal?
No, and the reason I say that is Allegri's teams always start slow. Like, Allegri is all about getting the team ready for peak performance in March and April. He designs the athletic preparation that way. He also eases in new players rather slowly. So, no, I wouldn't be concerned. I think Juve is going to start peaking a little bit later. Let's see if he starts putting in more of the new players right away. I was surprised that Cancelo started right away, but maybe it was because De Sciglio was also hurt. So now I really wouldn't make too much out of that Chievo match. Let's see what Juve looks like in mid-October and more importantly at the beginning of the new year.
Yeah, if anything, I honestly had that game as a trap game. I don't think highly of Chievo at all. But if there's any time where Juve is going to slip up, it's that first game of the season. Everyone's looking at Ronaldo, and they just don't get up to snuff. So winning ugly, you're going to have to do to be champions. Juve know how to win ugly. Definitely not a big deal. All right, David, how much of an impact does the fact that some leagues have their transfer window closing at a different time?
It's a good question. This is another one that I put some good thought into it. Like, for one, I think it makes it a little bit more exciting and it involves a little more strategy for clubs on how they do their deals. As an example, you know, at first when Inter was interested in Kita Balde, it was at first going to be a loan swap with Candreva going the other way. But because Candreva had reservations on the move, they were like, you know what, we'll just get Kita Balde on his own. We'll do a loan with option to buy and just deal with it that way. And Inter's thinking was like, you know, the window is still open in France and maybe closed for us. We can't bring in more players, but we can. There's thinkings like, okay, we'll keep Candreva for now, but maybe he'll see in practice how much competition there is. Maybe Monaco has more time to offer him terms that are more interesting to him. So I think there's a little more strategy involved. I also, you know, on a bigger level picture, you know, you also have to ask yourself, you know, if clubs that are in a league with the windows closed were to be less reticent to sell a player because they can't replace him, probably. I think there are some clubs that set themselves up so well. And, you know, I go back to how well Lazio's run, that as big of a loss as Milinkovic-Savic would be if he sold, and there's still a chance maybe Real Madrid makes a late push, I think Lazio did such a good job in the transfer window that they could survive losing him without him being replaced. So I just think it adds another level of strategy. And, you know, it keeps people like me on my toes. You know, usually when the transfer window closes in Italy and England and all the other leagues, usually on the same day, I'm like, okay, now I don't have to worry about transfers anymore. So it keeps me on my toes.
All right. This is a funny one, David. Are we better off not knowing who the admin of the Roma English account is?
And that Roma English account is like a rock star. They are terrific. There's no doubt about it. Absolutely hilarious, very creative. They branch out into so many genres, you know, not just the comedy and the banter, but they have playlists. They have pictures of famous rappers wearing Roma gear. Like, they really are impressive. They've developed quite the brand. I think it makes perfect sense for a club like Juve. I don't think you'd ever see things like that on, say, a club like, for a club like Roma, that makes sense. You would never see that at Juve, but they've really done a nice job with that. So if you notice, they use the word they, because it is a team effort. They are based not far, actually, from where I work. So they're a team. They do well. I can say that I know one member of that team personally. I'm going to respect his anonymity. Does a great job. And I'll just give you one hint. He worked with me on Di Marzio's site for some time. I got to tell you, I'm so impressed with how much this person has grown. But I really want to stress that, you know, when you think of the Roma admin, just know that it's a team effort. They really do a fantastic job. It's a team that complements each other rather well. So I kind of like that there's some mystery around it. And I hope I didn't give away too much about it.
Oh, I'm so jealous of the Roma account because so many of the team accounts are still so boring. On this day in 2004, Ashley Cole hit a normal goal. That's it. That's all you get. And it's so boring. You know, we know that there's people behind these accounts. You can actually act like a person every once in a while. So I love that Roma account. I really do. All right, David, let's move away from football. What is your favorite song off Metallica's Black Album?
Great question. You guys know we love getting the music, TV, film questions, journalism, writing. My friend Dave Tenenbaum trolling me, asking me, what do I think about the Oxford comma? I had a good laugh. Anyone who knows my writing, my tweets, definitely knows that punctuation and writing ability isn't my forte. I'm pretty good. I'm pretty decent at getting concepts and storylines, but writing ain't the thing. So well played, Dave Tenenbaum. So back to the question, we love getting them on music. So I have to say, I think the Black Album has aged really, really well. It was very controversial when it came out. It was a big departure for Metallica from their long, very heavy and fast songs to a more traditional hard rock style, but I actually think it has aged very well. I'm actually convinced that 20 years from now, when people talk about Metallica, they'll probably be talking more about the Black Album than, say, Masters of Puppets. And I wouldn't have said that a few years ago. So there's a lot of obviously very famous tracks on there. Enter Sandman, the first single, Unforgiven, Nothing Else Matters, which was the really more classic ballad that Metallica released, the first one. I mean, they had some songs before that were, you know, maybe not as heavy, but this was like a real ballad. So, and then there's also Wherever I May Roam, I think is a great song. But to me, the best track has to be Sad But True. That's one song that I think at every show they still play every time. I'm sure they play Enter Sandman too, but it's kind of like a song that's become really a classic on it. I think it's got one of the heaviest riffs Metallica has ever played. I really, really like that song. You know, it's really interesting. If you listen to the album version, you can also hear a little bit of keyboards on it, which is kind of unsettling with Metallica, but it works really, really well. So that's my favorite. If any of our listeners have others, tweet me in, but I think it's kind of hard to argue against that one.
All right, David. Last Twitter question. How excited are you about Deadwood returning as an HBO film?
I'm beyond thrilled that Deadwood is coming back as a movie. So Deadwood, for those of you who don't know, that was a show, kind of a Western-themed show on HBO. It came out right around the time of Sopranos and The Wire. I think it's definitely the most underrated show. I think part of it is because it didn't really have a real conclusion at the end. They weren't sure if it was going to come back for another season. It didn't have great TV ratings, so it kind of was left there. There really was no great conclusion. So they are coming back with it. They're making a TV movie of it, and I'm really thrilled about it. I can't tell you enough how good this show is. You know, I always like to think of kind of like the pantheon of the best TV shows. And I kind of feel like Sopranos and The Wire have to be on their own category. Like, I always go back and forth on which one's better between the two. So I kind of feel like they're in their own tier. I think right below that, you have a tier with like Breaking Bad, Mad Men, and I'm going to put Deadwood in this tier. I really would have liked to see, you know, maybe Deadwood would have gone to the level of Sopranos and The Wire had it been able to keep going. The writing is simply incredible. The head writer of that show, David Milch, is just like a Shakespearean level writer. But the way he uses the cursing and cussing on the show is just like flat out poetic. The main character, Al Swearengen, has some monologues on there that are absolutely Shakespearean level quality of writing. So I'm really excited to see the TV show. Now, there's also potential that this could be really bad because, again, the creator, David Milch, is kind of a little bit all over the place. I'm very curious to see how he wraps it up. Some of the projects he did after didn't work out too well. He did some other shows on HBO, John from Cincinnati, which is absolutely terrible. Then he did another one on horse racing that featured Dustin Hoffman. That didn't go over well at all either, but I'm gonna have faith that he's gonna get his mojo back for the TV movie. And if you haven't seen this show, I really can't recommend it enough. I really think if you love great TV shows, this one's gonna be right up there for you. So I want to take this opportunity to thank all our listeners. You guys are essentially co-writers of the show with the great questions that you send in. You compliment really well the stuff that I come up with for the show. You guys are also our marketing department. I can't thank you enough for it. Our Twitter account keeps growing. I love seeing people tweeting about Calcioland, especially first-time listeners giving us a shout-out. That really goes a long way. We don't have a marketing and advertisement budget, at least not yet. So we rely on you to let your friends know and your Twitter followers about the podcast. And a huge thank you to those of you that leave reviews. You hear it on so many podcasts, how important these are. So please support the podcast. If you're listening to us on an iPhone or an iPad, it takes 2 seconds. Please leave us a 5-star review. If you want to take it a step further and leave us a comment, Alex and I read them all, and we really appreciate it. So without further ado, we're going to close out talking about Fiorentina. As I mentioned, we haven't talked nearly enough about them, as well as Atalanta, and we're going to make up for it today and on Monday's show. So here's Chloe Beresford on Fiorentina. So for the interview part of the podcast, I am thrilled to be joined by Chloe Beresford. This is her third time on the podcast, and I'm really excited that she's here because we haven't covered Fiorentina nearly enough on the podcast, and there's no one better to do this to help us make up for this than Chloe. You can read her covering Serie A on so many different platforms. Every time I turn around, she's tweeting that she's contributing to a new site. She's been doing great work. You can read her on The Sportsman, Tifo Football, The Sack Race. She also writes along with me and others on Euro Fantasy Games. She's also been featured in Mundial Mag as well as Guardian Sport. So, Chloe, it's a real pleasure to have you on. Welcome back to Calcioland.
Thanks. Thanks for inviting me again.
Terrific. So let's talk a little bit about Fiorentina. They have yet to play. They're going to play their first match over the weekend. But let's take a step back to the summer transfer window first. It was a little bit rocky. There were some fan protests. There was a feeling that the owners, the De La Valle brothers, weren't that committed to the project. But I think at the end of the day, it ended pretty well, the transfer window. And the thing that really stands out to me is last summer, we saw a mass exodus at Fiorentina. This year, not so much. I mean, we had Badalj leave, but the club was able to hold on to their two jewels, the two young attackers, both figli d'arte, we would say in Italy, and that's Simeone and Chiesa. So, Chloe, let's start there. Tell me, A, if you were surprised that they were able to keep both, and B, how important is it that they're still on the team?
I don't think I was surprised that they managed to hang on to them. I know there was a lot of interest surrounding them, and there always is going to be so because they are sons of famous fathers. But I think the fact that they have come from football families helps them to keep their feet on the ground, and they've probably got access to good advice. And I don't think either of them had any intention of moving on before they're ready to do so. I think both of them have stated that intention. And I think from their point of view, you know, they want to continue to grow with Fiorentina. And so in that respect, I'm not surprised that they stayed. In terms of importance, it was hugely important because, as you mentioned, there have been lots of issues, ongoing issues with the Della Valle, the owners of Fiorentina, over not investing in the squad. And I think if they had decided to accept one of these offers, a big offer for one of those two players, the fans would have been extremely upset to not hang on to them and to sell them off, especially after last summer with selling all of those players that the fans were really attached to. So, yeah, I think for me, that's the biggest win of this transfer window, that we have now, at least until January, we have got these two players still in the squad.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it makes perfect sense for them to stay at least one more year of, you know, being at the center of the project, playing regularly. They've also developed good chemistry. And now they are going to be joined by a third exciting attacker, at least on paper. And this is Marco Piacca, who Juve had purchased two summers ago after excellent performances at the Euro. He struggled a little bit with injuries. He was out on loan in January, and now he's on Fiorentina. So tell me a little bit, how do you think he's going to fit on that front line with the other two jewels?
First of all, I was extremely pleased to sign Piazza from Juve. I don't think Fiorentina ordinarily would have been able to sign a player of his caliber. It's just that he's, like you said, he suffered with injuries, and since his injury, Juve have massively strengthened, so he's fallen right down the pecking order, and that's allowed him to go out on loan. So I'm really excited to see how he plays, and you know, so many people on Twitter and social platforms have said to me how excited they are to see these three all play together. I think Piazza will slot in quite naturally on the left with Chiesa on the right and Simeone in the middle. And if he can get those balls into Simeone, I'm sure that he will score more than 14 goals, which is what he managed to achieve last season. So, exciting times in the attacking front three at Fiorentina.
Very interesting. So I think he was in a lot of ways probably the most high-profile player to come in at Fiorentina, but there were others as well. I think Fiorentina sporting director Corvino is one of the most underrated in Serie A, has been around for a while, knows how to discover players at good values. We don't have to definitely go over all of them, but just maybe tell us a couple of things on some of the other standout new additions on the team.
Well, we let Marco Sportiello go in the summer, the goalkeeper. That was something I was initially quite disappointed about because he did play extremely well last season and he was a popular figure at Fiorentina. And that seemed a little bit of an odd decision because they did have an option to buy him from Atalanta after his loan expired. But then came the news that we'd sign Alban Lafont, who I personally haven't seen play, but I believe that he has been dubbed the French Don Runner, which, if that is right, it's very exciting. He's only 19 years old, and I think that he must be good in order to have replaced Sportiello with him. Otherwise, I can't see a reason why they wouldn't have hung on to Sportiello. So I'm very excited to see how he performs. He's going straight in as the number one, which is a big responsibility at 19 years old. So I'm assuming that Corvino has worked his magic here and that he is as good as that people say that he is. Another one is Kevin Morales from Everton, who I think is important in terms of the fact that he's 30. He's a little bit older because we do have a very young squad. He's obviously got experience of the Premier League. So I think he can bring a lot. And also interested to see Gerson and Ednilson Fernandez. First one's from Roma and Fernandez from West Ham. I think that might give Fiorentina something a little bit different in the midfield. Again, they're both young players. I think we had a solid base last season, and these players that are coming in are just going to continue to improve the squad this season. So, we've waited another week, so I just can't wait to see how these guys play.
Very interesting. So, as you know, I'm really into the weeds with transfers. That's something that I cover a lot, maybe even a little bit too much. So I wanted to get your perspective on this. I have to say that in the past 2 years, I've been rather surprised by the fact that Juve and Fiorentina have done, you know, not a lot of business, but they've done some deals. Last summer, of course, we saw Bernardeschi leave to join the old lady. This summer, we saw Piaka arrive at Fiorentina. For anyone that's followed Serie A, there's definitely a huge rivalry between the two clubs, especially on the Fiorentina side of things. It wasn't that long ago when Jovetic was at Fiorentina that the idea that Juve could sign Jovetic was like science fiction, like Fiorentina would just not allow it. And things have changed over the years. So tell me a little bit, were you surprised as well to see these two clubs do so much business recently?
Yes and no. I think especially with Fiorentina supporters, it's something where the owners of the club would have to tread a bit carefully, because like you say, there is this real rival with Juve. Obviously they weren't very happy when Bernardeschi went to Juve, but I think, you know, this is a professional club. It has to run itself in the correct manner, and when opportunities come along that is for the best of the club, they have to take these opportunities. You know, I guess that's one thing that could be said in terms of in favour of the ownership, that, you know, they're quite thick-skinned when it comes to the opinions of the fans. But in this case, I think, you know, Bernardeschi, he clearly wanted to leave. He wasn't going to stay at Fiorentina, so they got good money for him, in my opinion. So that benefited Fiorentina. And again, with Piazza, he's a real asset to the team. So I don't see why you would cut your nose off to spite your face, really. I think that, you know, it's like that saying, oh, we're all adults here. We, you know, all the Serie A clubs have to deal with each other. And, you know, if Fiorentina can benefit from trading with Juve, then I don't see why it's such a big deal, to be honest.
Interesting. So now let's talk about, I'm going to let you pick. I want to hear about some players on Fiorentina that you're really looking forward to seeing this season. We talked about the bigger names, but are there maybe some players that, you know, a fairly casual fan of Serie A wouldn't be that familiar that you want to bring to their attention?
I think perhaps Federico Cecchini, who arrived this summer from Cagliari. He's 26, so he's not as young as some of the others. And I think that obviously we needed a centre-back after the tragedy with Davide Astori. And you know, we are going to have German Petzela and Vitor Hugo in the main spaces, but I think he will provide some good cover. And you know, I trust in Corvino that he knows the league and he knows the kind of players that we need to bring in. And you know, it's another one like last season when we brought in Vincent Lorini from Empoli, where perhaps you think they've come from a smaller club than Fiorentina and maybe it won't work out. But I think the combination of Corvino bringing these players in and Pioli being so good with youngsters and being able to get the most out of them and the most out of the team as a whole, I think you know, these signings can really work out.
Okay, so I'm going to put you on the spot now, Chloe. We've been pretty guilty of this on the podcast. I feel like there's six teams that are kind of above the rest. And, you know, you look at the standings, maybe we're not being completely fair to Fiorentina and Atalanta, two clubs that we're going to cover more. So tell me a little bit, if you could fast forward to the end of the season, where do you see Fiorentina ending up?
I would like to see Fiorentina qualify for the Europa League. Only very narrowly missed out on it last season. But I think with the squad that we've got at the stage that it's at, and with Pioli trying to bring it all together on really quite a tight budget, I think that's perhaps the most that we can aim for. I think with how strong the other teams are in the league at the moment, I think the Champions League would be too much of an ask, but certainly I would really like to see Fiorentina reach Europe by the end of the season, and that has to be the aim. That's the aim that all the players have been talking about in the press. So it's a good target to have. It's a good direction in which this team, this young team, are travelling. So yeah, I think Europa League is definitely the aim.
So I'm going to put you on the spot one more time, Chloe. This is something that I've been asking all of our recent guests since it's just the beginning of the season. In your opinion, who is the second best team in Serie A? I know you're a Fiorentina fan, but I'm going to concede for you that Juve is at the top. Although I'm sure you don't want to say that publicly, but who do you think is the second best team?
It's difficult to say at this stage. I think obviously we've not seen Milan play yet, and I think they've really strengthened with bringing in Higuain, and you know, they were just lacking in that central striker area, and they've obviously sorted that out. So I think they could be quite good this year. Roma, I think, you know, they're heading in the right direction. They're on the right track. They've got Di Francesco, who's a really smart coach, and Monchi with the signings. In terms of signings alone, I have to say Inter. They've really strengthened in the areas that they've needed to, the weak points from last season. Personally, I'm not massively convinced by Spalletti. I think that he is too negative in his approach to bring consistency. I think if you look at his results both with Inter and with Roma the season before, last, that you get this wild inconsistency with him. And I think if Inter really want to push for second, they I'm not sure that he's quite the right man to do the job. But in terms of squad, they've definitely got it there. I think they've been so smart in the transfer market. So I think tentatively I'm going to say Inter, because Napoli, obviously they've been second the last few years, but I think they might be in a bit of a transition process with losing such a key player in Jorginho and Ancelotti having to adapt and get the players used to playing in a different style and that very rigid way of playing under Sarri. So, I think I'm going to go with Inter on this one.
Okay, that's been the consensus for most of our guests, except for one who I think you know pretty well. We couldn't get him to say it on the podcast. So, Chloe, I can't thank you enough. You continuously do fantastic work. Chloe puts out a lot of excellent articles each week on a lot of different platforms. There's a reason why so many sites have her on, so definitely check out what she's writing. And Chloe, I can't thank you enough for joining us today. I hope to chat with you during the season some more.
Yeah, thanks, David. See you soon.